Thus, since yesterday evening, thank you for coming. And something I think I won't do is each time another wave do a whole review of what we did the previous and the previous and the previous. This is a continuation of second canto Srimad Bhagavatam, and we're now at the second section of verses from chapter 4, canto 2, chapter 4, starting with verses 10 and 11 this morning. This section is a series of prayers by Shukadeva Goswami to the Personality of Godhead. So you can imagine they're very ecstatic. And they're very concentrated, so there's a lot within those prayers. It's the first section where, like this, Shukadeva Goswami is directly addressing the Personality of Godhead. When Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas, we find in the first canto, in the fourth chapter, Vyas, after compiling each of the Vedas, he entrusted each of the four Vedas to certain disciples who were very, very qualified. And their business, their service, was to preserve those Vedas, ensure that their integrity was maintained. And even the Puranic literature he entrusted to Romaharsha, the father of Sutta Goswami. But when it came to Srimad Bhagavatam, he felt there was only one person qualified, and that was Shukadeva. So, in other words, Shukadeva, capacity-wise, is in a most unique position. So whatever Shukadeva Goswami says, even the sages were... Let's hear from Shukadeva. What's he going to say? So these prayers are very powerful. And the consciousness of Maharaj Parikshit is similarly extremely eager, and no obstruction in his hearing. Maharaj Parikshit has gone beyond the sense of urgency that I'm going to die within 7 days, so I better be fully attentive, because this is going to determine my destination. He was beyond that, way beyond that. You know, we might be like Ajamila. He was very attentive to what the Vishnu Dutas and the Yama Dutas were saying, because the outcome of that discussion was what's going to happen next. He had lots of motivation to really listen up. And from that, he achieved spiritual perfection. Maharaj Parikshit was beyond that stage. Just by being in the presence of Shukadeva Goswami, by being in the presence of a person of the qualification of Shukadeva Goswami, a great, 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 great devotee like Maharaj Parikshit, how can we even imagine what he was experiencing, the state of consciousness? But, moreover, he presented his questions, two questions we discussed yesterday, and he received in three chapters the answer to those questions. And so, in the beginning of the fourth chapter, the first 8 verses described what happened then. What were the transformations that took place within Maharaj Parikshit? So, this is a little review, but several things. His mind was completely fixed in the personality of Godhead. So, Mayi Channanya Yogena, or Ananyas Chintayanto Mam, these verses in Bhagavad Gita are there. You know, Krishna is describing when that happens. Maharaj Parikshit is demonstrating how it happened. So all of you that like to ask, how to get to that stage? So Maharaj Parikshit is demonstrating the how to. Ardent listening, in 2 words, with great devotion. The verse that we ended up with yesterday is Maharaj Parikshit. So he fixed his mind upon the personality of Godhead. He was detached altogether from the circumstances, the duality of life. Uh-oh, I'm about to die. Uh-oh, I have to give up my kingdom. And I have all these attachments because for so long I've been king and living like a king and thinking of myself as, or acting in the role of, at least, king. And those gross and subtle attachments are very hard to give up. It's really, it's universal. I was recently visiting in Alachua, where we had our 5 wonderful days of meetings, 10 hours a day. It was really ecstatic. But I survived. And the person that I was visiting, staying in the home of, is at the stage of life where they're entering Vanaprastha stage of life. Their daughter has grown up. She's in college. She's well settled and situated, living with some friends, and, you know, has an idea of marriage, and they're ready to move on, sell their house, and become full-time engaged in service in a temple. So I was thinking, when this devotee was, after the morning program, was driving me back to his home, it was, you know, the morning light was just starting to come, and we going down this long driveway to his little house, and he spent whatever it is, 20 something years of his life in that house. And it's just, you know, wood and nails and some stone and cement and stuff, and they spent so much time in that house. I'm sure there's attachment to the house, but it, you know, to wood and stone and nails. And to move out of that, because all the things that we did together with our family and attachment to, you know, material energy. He's quite detached, but people get attached. How quickly we get attached. You know, someone sits in your seat and you get up and come back and someone sits in your seat. You're sitting in my seat. Just seeing this mother bird sitting in the little plant pot out here. No, you come to the window and look at the mother bird, and she's looking at you like, don't you dare come near me, because I got little eggs underneath me, and you better watch out. You're big, but watch. I'm going to protect these eggs. And same in Mayapur during our GBC meeting. Some of you have been to Mayapur, and when we had our yatra, that when it was raining, we had to go up on the roof, and that big room is where we have our GBC meetings. We go up the winding stairs and up and up and up and up and up. And there's some construction. They're extending a little section right by the stairway to go out. So there's like, you know, ladders. And you know how construction is in India. It's all that stuff all over the place. And then one little platform, there was a mother bird. Waiting for them. So there was a mother bird sitting there, and she sat there almost 24/7. She was there while we're going up and down the stairs to our meetings, and she's sitting there, and she's, you know, watching everybody as they go by. Don't you dare come near me. But once I went by and to see what it was that she was sitting on, it was just like this construction platform. When she wasn't there, there was a series of maybe 25 little twigs that was her nest. And that was what she was sitting on. It was, this is my nest. And don't tread on me. Don't mess with me. This is my nest. You know, whatever, 25, 30 pieces of twigs. And that's home. And all day long, sitting on that little nest. Attached. It's just part of being in this place. Although we're foreign, I mean, we're spirit soul. We're not only, you know, need a visa to come here. It's, you know, it's not even part of who we really are. But we become attached. And to let go of that attachment, it's like, you know, having some tar on your hand. How do you get the tar off? You take the other hand, then you got tar on the other hand. How do you get rid of it? It's stuck. Krishna indicates this in Bhagavad Gita. Once the living entity becomes conditioned in contact with material nature, it's very difficult. Unless there's spiritual intervention, it's not possible. Because as soon as you do something, you're involving yourself in a reaction that involves you in further bondage to the reaction of that action you just did. And if you try to do nothing, you'll expire. The body will expire and the soul will go on to another body. So, damned if you do and damned if you don't. You can't do something and can't do nothing. What do? You're stuck. Unless there's intervention, some descending mercy that comes from another strata, another sphere, and relieves the soul of that stuck position. Next comes in. I thought I was bad, but Satchinandan Swami really, in Festival of Inspiration, very low level of tolerance for that sound vibration. It's nice, it doesn't, anyway, suits the ashram well. So, attachment to Krishna and detachment from duality, they happen simultaneously. In the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna indicates this, that what is called yoga what is called renunciation is the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. Because when you link yourself with the Supreme, detachment from duality follows. Or when you turn a light on, darkness is dispelled. Right? You go into a dark room. You can't see anything. Turn on the light switch. And you can see, but not so you can see because the darkness is dispelled, because light is stronger than darkness. Spirit is stronger than matter. Spiritual consciousness dispels material consciousness. So you can struggle, if you like, with material consciousness. Daivihiyeshu gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. 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 Difficult struggle. That's one choice. Or mayamitam tarantite. You can surrender to Krishna and go quickly to him. Mam eva ye prapadyante mayamitam tarantite. So Maharaj Parikshit was in Shukadeva Goswami's association, fixed, detached, and eager to hear more. What did he want to hear about? The message that he received, one of his questions was, what is that subject matter that one should hear, chant, and remember? Krishna Kathamritam. So he wants to hear about Krishna. His eagerness is to hear about Krishna. And the starting point for what he wants to hear about is Sambandha Gyan. He wants to hear about the relationship of Krishna with this created realm. The canto heading, the introduction page of this canto is Cosmic Manifestation. And it's a very appropriate place to begin, as we were discussing yesterday evening. If you want to approach Krishna, you approach his lotus feet first. The subject matter that one should hear about is Krishna. So he wants to approach Krishna. So he approaches Krishna's lotus feet. And approaching lotus feet of Krishna means to have the mood as well as the understanding that supports that mood of humble menial service. How do you have that humble and menial service attitude? Here's the how-to question. Maharaj, how-to? So, by understanding properly the relationship of all things that we can readily perceive, that's the cosmic manifestation. What is that relationship with the personality of Godhead? Like Prabhupada said, a pure devotee, when he sees a tree, he sees Krishna. What does that mean? Ravindra Sarup Prabhu gave a whole lecture, I remember, in one of our week-long retreats in Gitanagari. We were sitting in a Gurukul cabin, and just out the window was a tree. As he was describing, he was looking at the tree, and because he was a PhD in philosophy of religion, I think. And as a PhD student, he heard Prabhupada speak that, and he was scratching his head, I've never heard that one before in all my studies of philosophy, that when you look at a tree, you see Krishna. Does that mean you literally don't see the tree, you see Krishna? Or does it mean that you see this in relation to Krishna? It's neither one of those exactly. Another example that Prabhupada gave is when sometimes parents will keep little baby shoes of their child when their child was a baby, and I've seen that in people's homes, or sometimes now people in cars, they hang a CD from the rearview mirror, but it used to be you would hang your child's, it was a thing, it was fashion, little baby shoes hanging from the rearview mirror. Or some air freshener now. It's, they really stink, but it's supposed to really stink. So baby shoes. And when you, Prabhupada's explanation is when they see the baby shoes, they don't just see the baby shoes, they see their child in their mind's eye. Because of the affection, the attachment, the emotion connected to the child, just by seeing that which is of the child, one sees the child in one's mind. Those feelings are aroused. So wouldn't it be nice if everything that you saw reminded you of Krishna? A nice blank wall. And I'm looking out there, there's a house and some trees and birds and fence and Krishna. So this question that Maharaj Pariksit is asking is for that purpose. How to see, how to bring that which immediately strikes our consciousness, that which with our senses we can perceive. We have five knowledge acquiring senses, five working senses in the mind. So how to connect the senses and the perception of the senses of this five sense objects. There's 16 items. Connect them all with Krishna. That's what he wants to do. Because these are Krishna's energies. And they're instruments that Krishna gives to serve him and to appreciate him with the intelligence to understand him and to engage those energies in his service. So that takes this descending mercy, because otherwise it's like tar. You're stuck to the position of trying to be the enjoyer of this place that's just bringing suffering. Or trying to get out of this place and you can't. Okay, so he glorifies the verse that we discussed yesterday evening. He glorifies Maharaj Pariksit, glorifies Shukadeva Goswami as being qualified to describe and enlighten him about that which is inconceivable. That's what Maharaj Pariksit wants. Understanding the inconceivable. But it's not by the instrument of the material mind that you can understand the inconceivable. It's when this descending mercy comes down and sits in the lotus of the heart through spiritual sound vibration, cleanses the heart, makes the heart pure and soft, and that knowledge illumines within the heart. And then one can see Krishna everywhere through the lens or through the medium of love for Krishna. So text 11. Sutta is narrating about this dialogue between Maharaj Pariksit and Shukadeva Goswami. So Sutta says to the sages, after that, after Maharaj Pariksit posed these questions, the question was, describe how, what's this relationship of the Lord with his energies? His activities are most wonderful, including the activity of creation, which he does, or through the agency of his energies he does. So can you describe how he does it? Can you describe this relationship? And you can do it, Shukadev, because not only you're learned, not only you're detached from those forces of illusion, but you're a great devotee. And because you're a great devotee, you're empowered to bring into my consciousness that which is unavailable to the great demigods, great sages, and small little persons like me. So then Sutta says to the sages, when Shukadeva Goswami was thus requested by the king to describe the creative energy of the personality of Godhead, what did he do? He systematically remembered the master of the senses, Sri Krishna, and to reply properly, he spoke thus. So one hears this again and again, this moment of pause or reflection. Now, transcendental reflection is different than mode of goodness reflection. Mode of goodness reflection is something comes to your attention, and a quality of the mode of goodness is what is reflective, not reactive. You know, one in the mode of goodness doesn't just, what's the word, impulsively do something or speak something. That's the mode of passion. Persons who are impulsive, they need a little mode of goodness buffer in there, because the mode of goodness doesn't just react. The mode of goodness reflects. In a reflective mode, one considers the situation, what is appropriate, what is inappropriate, that which is appropriate, how to properly do that which is appropriate. That space is the space of mode of goodness, and that permits or gives facility for the Lord of the heart to give inspiration. And then one can internally be inspired by Krishna, externally consider what is scriptural indications of dharma, and what is a thing, what is to be done, what is not to be done. The transcendentalists' space of reflection is thought goes to Krishna. Like, thought goes to Krishna. You don't have to think about the thought going to Krishna. It goes to Krishna. That's transcendental. Because here's some service. And who is the service for? Not just task-oriented, here's some service, I got to get it done. In devotion, this is for Krishna. It's coming from Krishna and it's for Krishna. And I'm so fortunate that this opportunity to serve Krishna is being presented. Now that's true in all circumstances of life. The difference is a devotee thinks that way and a non-devotee doesn't think that way. They think, here's a problem, or here's an opportunity. How do I deal with this problem? How do I take advantage of the opportunity? A mode of goodness considers how I can do with this opportunity some good for others, and so forth. The mode of goodness mindset. And the transcendentalist, even if it's some hardship or obstacle or tribulation or, you know, that side, something really tough, something bad, something horrific, something calamitous, It's an opportunity to serve Krishna. In the face of duality, the other side is simply an opportunity to serve Krishna. It's not my reward for being a good person, now I can enjoy. It's a good thing. It's some opportunity to serve Krishna. And just reflex, or the reflective position, is to consider one's relationship with Krishna first. And then from that place, one acts as an instrument or a servant of Krishna. Very decisive moment. And life is but a series of such moments, opportunities to serve Krishna. And how do we view the opportunity? And one can't do that or go there or have that experience without Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness is induced or facilitated by Shukadeva Goswami-like association. He had that opportunity because of Vyas, and Vyas because of Narada, and Narada because of Brahma, and Brahma because of the personality of Godhead. It's something that we receive in disciplic succession, in other words, that gift of Krishna consciousness. The one who receives that gift of Krishna consciousness, there's nothing more precious. It's our way out of this material condition of life. The attachment to illusion subsides and goes away, and attachment to capital R reality takes its place in the mood of loving service. This is a great gift. Shukadeva Goswami exhibits one who has that gift, and such a person who has such a gift can bestow that gift upon others. In purport, here's how Prabhupada discusses this. The devotees of the Lord, while delivering speeches and describing the transcendental attributes of the Lord, do not think that they can act independently. So this is an explanation of what it means practically. What does it mean practically to systematically remember the personality of Godhead? What does that mean? How do you do that? Remember the personality of Godhead. But then I just, as soon as I do something, I've moved out of that space of remembering the personality of Godhead because I have to do something. And it's a classic challenge. I'll give two examples. One example was one devotee who is now one of our TBC gurus and sannyasis. I remember when he was a bhakta in our temple in New York, and he was doing book distribution. And I was the Sankirtan leader, and he came back from one day's book distribution, and, you know, Sankirtan leader sits with the Sankirtan devotees and says, "Hari Bol, how did it go today?" And then, you know, they pour out their realizations, how it went today. So he was saying, you know, there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, engage in your prescribed duty and always think of me. So I can engage in my prescribed duty, or I can think of Krishna, but to put the two together simultaneously, my binary processor doesn't compute it. So now it's just a relatively new devotee, but the answer that I gave was, it's possible when you have attachment for the person, then you automatically you think of the person, whatever you're doing. Prabhupada's example, young boy, young girl, Google-eyed, and you know, he's thinking of her and she's thinking of him, wherever they are. Someone doesn't have to tell him or her, while you're in study hall, think of the boy. And vice versa, think of the girl. Or while walking to school or whatever. He's thinking of her and she's thinking of him because there's some attachment. Similarly, when the stage of spiritual progress comes that we're attached to Krishna, then we're performing our prescribed duty. You don't abandon your prescribed duty when that stage comes. You have service for Krishna. You do your service for Krishna in a theistic way, according to codes of scripture, and always think of him through attachment, through devotion. Always think of him. And always perform one's service for him. So, that was my answer. At this stage, we do those things that help give us remembrance of Krishna by rising early and performing Mangal Arati and chanting and worshipping the deity and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the spiritual master. And then we have our day's activity. So that's life within a temple, and then life outside of a temple. One young office worker, computer software young man, said, "Maharaj, I really like Krishna consciousness and can understand everything up until I sit down at my desk. It's, you know, from the time I wake up, it's thought of Krishna, thought of Krishna, thought of Krishna, thought of Krishna. Turn the computer on at 9 o'clock and Krishna goes. At 5 o'clock I turn the computer off and I think of Krishna again. How do I put these two together?" Same question, different field of activity because of different psychophysical natures. But the same principle. This is very practical. So there's preliminary things that one can do to help facilitate remembering Krishna while in the workplace. I don't want to give a whole class on that right now. Just discuss the principle. The principle is sadhana is to help awaken the natural attraction and thought of Krishna. And then the challenge for those that have the workplace responsibility or opportunity is to see that in terms of Krishna. Just like to see the tree in relation to Krishna, and the child and the shoes of the child in relation to Krishna, not just in relation to my attachments, but in relation to Krishna. And there's a whole, you know, how-to discussion, but it's a principle. Shukadeva Goswami's service wasn't going on Sankirtan, nor was it going to the computer office, to his cubicle, and turning on the computer. It was speaking the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. One can do all three of those things in false ego. Kartaham iti manyate. Thinking oneself, I'm the doer. But the lesson that we're being given here, and you can apply it according to what is appropriate in your life, is one sees oneself as not independent from Krishna, but in relation to Krishna, as an instrument of Krishna. Think about it, and then try to apply it. One can reflect or pray. I am situated in a relationship with Krishna. That's who I really am. This body is temporary. the psychophysical nature of this body is temporary. I may be a mother, I may be a worker, I may be a student, I may be a this, I may be that. It's all temporary, and it's even whatever it is, it's going to change even in the course of our lifetime. I have a certain nature, and according to that nature, there's some work for me, but my spiritual identity is I have a relationship with Krishna. I am situated in a relationship with Krishna, although I've somehow managed to forget that. But my real identity is I have this relationship with Krishna. I want to act within that relationship with Krishna. The relationship is, he's the master and I'm the servant. He's directing all activities, sarva shachaham riddhi sannivishto matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha. He's in charge, he's giving directions. And according to those directions, I'm the servant. I carry out those directions. And, you know, in the broad stroke and even in the details. If I'm in this reflective mode, so let me remember before I begin speaking, or before I begin my sankirtan, or before I sit down at the computer, or before I take care of my husband, wife, child, whatever, before I do the things that I do in life, let me just remember this relationship. Let me act in that relationship with Krishna. How can I forget Krishna in that consciousness? So it's a, there's the realm of duality and there's the realm of transcendence. And the opportunity of Krishna consciousness is to move from duality into transcendence by that very pregnant moment of reflection of, I'm situated in a relationship with Krishna. He's master, I'm servant, I carry out whatever he says, I'm his instrument. I'm not disconnected from Krishna. I'm not independent from Krishna. We're accustomed in this duality program of thinking of ourselves independent. And it may not be, you know, this adolescent defiance. I'm independent. I'm going to assert it. Rebelliousness kind of thing. But it's there, maybe more gentle and less blatant, but it's independent mentality. And the antidote for that independent mentality is, I'm not independent, I'm dependent. I'm the instrument of Krishna's will. I want to know what is Krishna's will, and I'm not independent from that will. I'm the instrument of that will. Whatever Krishna wants. If we take the step towards sincerely desiring that relationship with Krishna, and based on the relationship with Krishna, wanting to know what is Krishna's will, it may be very difficult to know what is Krishna's will, but it's the step in the direction that Krishna then, like the sun rising in the morning, discloses. Light. And that's very exciting. As life unfolds, progressively more and more, the will of Krishna illumines our life. Instead of chasing after duality and getting punched out every now and then by the material energy that's brutal. Going, wow, that hurt. What happened? Mama Maya Duratya Ya. The senses are instruments elements, our ingredients, all endowed by the Lord. Therefore, whatever an individual can do, speak, etc., see, is under the direction of the Lord only. So this is even an ordinary, just, you know, walking down the street, putting food in your mouth and chewing and digesting, or, you know, anything that you do, just simple things. It's the, where Krishna is the ability giver. He's the resource giver. He's the supplier of how the whole machine works. And we're riding on the machine. We're under Krishna's direction at every moment. And just acknowledging that helps us become, you know, dissolve the sense of independence from the Supreme Lord. No one is free to act freely and independently, and as such, one should always seek the permission of the Lord to act or eat or speak. We're not independent. We seek permission. And by the blessings of the Lord, everything is done. Everything done by a devotee is beyond the principles of the four defects typical of the conditioned soul. That's nice. We have this understanding. Scriptures teach that all conditioned souls are subject to four defects and make mistakes, illusioned. The every endeavor on the material plane is flawed. And the position of a devotee is under the direction of Krishna. Their senses and their mind, their speech, their activities are directed by the Lord. When that full submission to the Lord is there, then the living entity's activities become free from those defects. That is to say, what Maharaj Pariksit is, excuse me, what Shukadeva Goswami is about to speak is perfect. Prabhupada spoke like this in a humble way. I may be an imperfect person, but if I speak the words of a perfect person, my speaking is perfect. And that's the humility and submission of a devotee. The humble mood is, I'm so disqualified. But the Krishna conscious part is, Krishna's perfect. And I'm his servant, so I just act on Krishna's behalf or speak on Krishna's behalf. And whatever he enables me to speak or to do or to perform, that's Krishna. I'm just his instrument. My project in life is to become a better instrument in Krishna's hands. Prahlad Maharaj spoke like this, that when pushed forward by Lord Brahma and the demigods to offer prayers, his first expression was, I have no qualification to come before you, the Supreme Lord, and speak anything. I have disqualification plenty. I have no qualification. But because you're very merciful, whatever I have to offer, you will accept it. Or Sutta Goswami, when asked to speak what he heard from Shukadeva Goswami, he says, it's such an elevated subject. How can one speak? It's inconceivable. But as a bird flies in the sky according to his capacity to fly in the sky, I'll describe whatever the Supreme Lord empowers me to speak. That's all I can do. That's all any one of us can do. So it's not a competition who can fly higher. Whatever Krishna empowers any one of us to do. That's what we do. What's important is the consciousness behind the activity that we do, the Krishna consciousness behind the activity that we do. And if Krishna consciousness is there, you know what happens? Krishna gives more ability, because it's not going to then be a weight on the drowning man's turban. Just put a nice big jewel on the drowning man's turban, he'll drown more quickly. But Krishna then decorates his devotee with more and more and more, because the devotee simply uses that more and more in a humble mood of service, recognizing Krishna is very kind. Like Sudama, Krishna is very kind. He didn't give me anything because he knows that I'm such a person that if he gave me something, I'd become puffed up. I'm special. And then when he reached his home and saw palace and opulence, his position was, Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind, and Krishna is so kind, and Krishna is so kind. Because his consciousness was pure devotion to Krishna. Whatever the circumstance, Krishna is very kind. Unchanging in the face of duality. But most of us, our happiness is determined by the face of duality. Does it look like this or does it look like that? Am I having fun? Or am I suffering? The position of devotion frees one from that duality because of the mode of service. Whatever it is, I'm not independent. It's just service of this type or that type. Okay, so the next verse, and this is as far as we're going to go, text 12, it's the first of these prayers. Shukadeva Goswami praying to the personality of Godhead. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, for the creation of the material world, he accepts the three modes of nature. He is complete. He is the complete whole, residing within the body of everyone, and his ways are inconceivable. So, he was asked by Maharaj Parikshit about how does the Lord do this? Bring about the material creation. So he's praying to the Supreme Lord, glorifying, praising the Supreme Lord, that for the purpose of creation he accepts the Sanskrit word is grihita. Grihita shakti tritayaya dehinam. Grihita shakti tritayaya dehinam. Grihita, he accepts. It's not like there's something outside of himself and he needed, you know, he got a flat tire so he had to get the jack and, you know, the lug wrench, and so he accepted those two things so he could take the tire off and put the new one on. That's something outside of himself. He accepts means he manifested. This is a very, this is a philosophical concept that the Bhagavatam addresses. You bear with me for just a moment. Even amongst monotheistic religions, or even amongst Vaishnava traditions, there are different detailed ways of describing the relationship between the energy and the energetic. For example, Ramanujacharya taught Vishishta Advaita, correct? Vishishta Advaita. Vishishta means attributes. And his teaching was there are vishishtas or attributes that inhere or they're inherently within the Supreme Lord. And those attributes have a Advaita relationship with Him. They're non-different than Him. And sometimes the Supreme Lord, Narayan, He manifests those vishishtas. And sometimes He withdraws those vishishtas, and the relationship is a non-dual relationship. So the Lord in His creation, although the followers of Ramanujacharya point to the Vishnu Purana text that says that there are three categories of energies, the external, internal, and marginal. And the cosmic manifestation, according to Bhagavad Gita, is two of those energies. Apara Prakriti and Para Prakriti. Inferior and material Prakriti. Inferior and superior Prakriti. Or matter and spirit. Or the external energy and the marginal energy. And the material creation is a manifestation of those two. And sometimes the external energy is manifest and sometimes it's withdrawn. But Vishishta Advaita. So that's his idea. Or the doctrine of Sri Vaishnavism. I'm not going to go too far with this, but each of the four principal sampradayas have their explanation. And that's the question that's being asked. What's the relationship between the Lord and His energy? Madhvacharya was Dvaitavad. They're distinct and separate from the Lord. They're from the Lord, but they're distinct and separate. You know, Madhvacharya. Dualism. The Lord and His energies, they're separate. The energies and the energies, varieties of energies, they're separate. The living entity and the Lord are different. The living entity and living entities are different. Living entity and matter, they're different. Panchaveda. It was like a theme that appeared throughout all of his teachings. He died speaking Panchaveda. His writings include Panchaveda. Dvaita. Difference. That's his doctrine. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's doctrine is simultaneous one in difference. This is a very wonderful explanation, but it's achintya, it's inconceivable. Just as Shukadeva Goswami has said here in this verse, Anupalaksha Vartmane. Anupalaksha, inconceivable. How the Lord, who is all spirit, accepts the modes of nature, which are material, and doesn't become affected by it. Because we accept the modes of material nature, and we become not just affected by it. We're totally manipulated and can't get free from it, no matter what we do or don't do. But he's different. And how he's different is inconceivable. How he does it, because that's what Maharishi Pariksit wanted to know. This is an inconceivable subject, but you can explain it. It's understandable through devotion. It's not understandable through our binary processor, the mind. It's not conceivable within the mind. Don't try. You waste your time. He uses the modes of nature, which are under his control. Correct? Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti. Under his Adhyaksha. He doesn't even have to pick up the lug wrench and the jack. He just Adhyaksha. He just sees it. He just sees the modes of material nature and presto. Voila. Bhavati. It happens. They act. He energizes the modes of nature just by his glance. And that's how he does it. He just glances over Pradhan and the modes of nature become activated by the living entities carried in his glance and time, and things happen. Activity begins under the modes of nature, which are under his supervision, although he doesn't have any direct involvement in it. And it's very mysterious. It's more than mysterious, it's inconceivable. Grihita Shakti Tritayaya Dehinam Antar Bhava Anupalaksha Vartmane. So, Dehinam. Deha Dehi Dehinam. The body, those are within a body, and then plural. All who are within bodies are influenced by these modes of nature, which the Supreme Lord directs the modes of nature. He grihita shakti tritayaya dehinam. He accepts the modes of nature. He utilizes, he directs the modes of nature to bring about varieties. That's what the three modes of nature are for, to bring about variety. According to the desire of the living entities, there's varieties of stuff, and so the varieties are arranged by the modes of nature. And the modes of nature are not passive, although it's just prakriti. When the living entity desires separate enjoyment from Krishna, they act on him, and he gets involved in them. It's a two-way street. They condition the living entity, but the living entity also chooses, I want this one, that one. We're choosing. Say, we choose our diet. We choose foods in goodness, passion, or ignorance. Or we choose dealing with others in goodness, passion, or ignorance. Or whatever it is. We're making choices, and the modes of nature are acting upon us. Both directions. But the Lord is supervising the whole show. He sees what our desire is, and he also knows what our deserve is. It's guna and karma. And how he does it is anupalaksha. It's inconceivable. Vartmane. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, great yogis and great rishis cannot hold in their mind a conception of the personality of Godhead that does this. So they have another conception. They don't have a Bhagavan conception, they have some other conception. And the varieties of conceptions are unlimited. Everyone carries some conception. Everyone carries some conception. In Bhagavad Gita, in the Krishna is asked by Arjuna, if one does not have faith in your words, does not one not have faith in something else? And the answer is yes, according to the modes of nature. Indirectly, the answer is faith is intrinsic to the soul. And if you don't have faith in Krishna, you're going to have faith in something because it's intrinsic to the soul. And the default position is there's modes of nature, and according to the modes of nature, there's divisions of faith. So, same, you have a conception of God according to the scripture, or you have a conception of God that's not according to scripture. You have a conception of God. Then it's decided by the modes of nature. I'm a little reluctant to give this example, but I will anyway because it's being recorded. I spent time, well, it was like about 5 days ago, with one of my sisters who's very good person. And she recalled the last time we got together, which was 10 years ago. And it was just by Krishna's arrangement. I had two 6-foot tables set up on 6th Avenue and West 4th Street in Manhattan, you know, right by, in the West Village. Preaching, you know, book table, dioramas, video, the whole thing. And she just passed by. And, you know, I was only there for 3 hours, and she was in the city for some seminar she was taking. Just passed by and saw me standing there. And we had this discussion. She reminded me of the course of the discussion. I had asked her, what is her conception of God? So she more elaborately described it, that when I was 17, I thought about the conception of God the way that we had learned going to Sunday school and church. And that conception of God, you know, I couldn't accept. So the conception of God that I formulated at that time, a 17-year-old, was, you know, something like a Taoist conception, although she hadn't read Taoism, that we're energy, and the energy, you know, something passes through different stages of life, and, you know, when this body is over, that energy goes on, and, you know, the ultimate, penultimate position is becoming situated with the, she went like this, the supreme energy. And that's not like, it wasn't an idea of merging and becoming one with some kind of, we have our individuality, but it's not exactly clear what that individuality is, but it's, and then what not God, like, you know, this big guy in a big chair that's judging people, but, you know, benevolent energy force, that was the word she used. That's my conception. And it's kind of undergone some changes, and she described the changes. So, and there's a zillion different conceptions, even within a religious tradition. Persons that are adherents of a particular religious tradition will have so many conceptions, subdivisions of that tradition. And there's there's conceptions according to the modes of nature. It's like plants reach for the sun because that's the sustenance of their life. The roots grow into the soil and the leaves and branches reach towards the sun. So all living beings also, there's things that sustain our existence, and there's some connection there. There's also some connection with the supreme. And just as there's even plants and trees according to the modes of nature. Fruits and flower-bearing trees, they're in the mode of goodness. Those to produce no edible fruits or flowers or attractive, fragrant flowers. Mode of passion. Mode of ignorance is thorns and poison and mode of ignorance. And varieties within those modes of nature. What to speak of people and conceptions of God and whatever exists. The modes of nature are acting, conditioning the living entity, and it's all on remote control. Krishna doesn't have to roll up his sleeves and go to work, go to the office. Go to school before that and get a paycheck so he can maintain himself. It doesn't work like that. Everything's happening under remote control, since time immemorial. So he adopts, or he accepts, or grahita, having accepted the modes of nature. It's like one of his energies that he utilizes for the purpose of creation. And it's personified. The modes of nature are not just energies, but it's personified. They're servants of his. In this canto, just end with this. In this canto in Brahma, in the ninth chapter, Brahma goes, in his stage of realization, he sees the personality of Godhead. He does his tapa, and the whole of the spiritual world is manifest before him. Whereas before that, it was just darkness in all directions, seated on the lotus, and he has no idea where the beginning of that lotus came from, because he tries intelligently to, if I go down the stem of this lotus, I'll find where I came from. He goes down, 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 and he can find no end to it, because it's a spiritual stem. So then he hears tapa, so he goes back on the lotus and he engages in tapa. And after a long period of tapa, the whole of the spiritual world appears before him. And when he goes into the gates of Vaikuntha, he comes before the Lord. He sees the Lord surrounded by so many spiritual associates. And include amongst those spiritual associates are the three modes of material nature that exist in the spiritual world that are activated according to the Lord's indication. Okay, guys, you've got some service. And he gives them some service, which is the service of conditioning living entities who are averse to the Lord's supremacy. They're personified, but they act in this inconceivable way that neither can you see the person, nor can you even necessarily see the modes of nature, unless one is trained in the mode of goodness to see according to the scripture. Jnana chakshusha or shastra chakshusha, then you can see the modes of nature. Oh, there's the mode of goodness. That's pretty rare. There's a lot of passion. I can see that one. And I can see the mode of ignorance. And otherwise, it's invisible. The modes are not visible to one who is not trained to see them. Can't see them, covered by ignorance. Situated in knowledge by proper training and purification, then you can see them. And when you see them, that knowledge brings detachment. You don't become reactionary to the mode of passion. Just, wow, that was quite a display of the mode of passion. What's next? Little mode of goodness, that's good. Some more ignorance, okay. Modes of nature. In relation to Krishna, we can see these things. Okay, so Shukadeva is going to continue explaining through prayer how this relationship works. Inconceivable becomes knowable through the medium of devotion. Nice. Inconceivable becomes knowable through the medium of devotion. Any comments or questions? Yes.
You said this phrase, pregnant moment of realization, or sorry, of reflection. I didn't understand that.
Pregnant. You know what, you understand what pregnant is.
Yeah.
So there's a seed that when the mother is carrying the seed, she's pregnant. So the moment where thought goes to Krishna, and specifically to relationship with Krishna. So before I, here's something coming at me, whatever it is. Circumstance of life is coming at me. I'm Krishna's servant. That's what I mean. Before I speak or act or even think. From that position, I then think or speak or act. And I prefaced it by the mode of goodness is, transcendence is pure goodness, but the mode of goodness alone is what is appropriate. What is to be done, what is not to be done. What is duty, what is forbidden. Not just, you know, what do I feel like today? I'm in a bad mood, so, you know, it's... Leave at 9 a.m.?
Yes, around an hour.
Okay. At 8:30 a.m. Mm. Okay. Our head cook at the Chicago Temple is down with the flu, and he's not going to be able to prepare prasadam for our program at the temple. So some persons have to disappear. Are those that have to disappear, would you like to raise a question before you disappear? You okay?
Yes, is that seeing that force of nature, is it a one-time activity or?
Ongoing.
Ongoing.
Yes, not an event, it's a state of experience or consciousness.
Is that, you know, after the end of the millennium, that material energy gets back to, then again for creation purposes, Vishnu sees lands again.
Yeah.
After the period of time. Of,
yeah. When one becomes situated in devotion, like let's say, a pure devotee of the Lord, when they come in contact with matter, they spiritualize matter. And the modes of nature subside, and the spiritualization is activated just by the presence of their Krishna consciousness. They make this place, Vaikuntha, where the modes of nature don't act. But it's very much a function of consciousness. The modes of nature respond to the consciousness of the individual. The modes of nature with which they are conducted, the modes of nature then whammy them. And tendency carries forward, but so conditioning continues indefinitely until the modes of nature, the whole prakriti is withdrawn. Then again, they're activated at the time of the Lord's glance. So the exception to that, or the remedy, is pure devotees association. The action of the modes of nature and karma subside. Wow. One should be very eager for that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So it varies from individual to individual, right?
Sure. Because it varies because of our desire and our deserve. That's on the material side, and our eagerness on the spiritual side. There are different degrees of eagerness. And the degree of eagerness can also be tempered by the modes of passion, goodness, or ignorance. They got a strong grip. And the person behind that grip is mighty, almighty. You have something?
In your answer to Jitu Prabhu, you were saying, here's a situation of life
So it's coming to me. So that one has to be very aware, or at least detached, to understand there is a situation of life coming to me. Usually we're caught unaware.
Well, the situations of life are coming our direction at every moment. So it's a question of consciousness. And as Ananda Vrindavan was saying yesterday, there are times when I'm more aware and less aware. Depends on, you know, how I'm situated. But that's, you know, that's life. That's how it is. There are times when we're more prepared, less prepared. But situations are coming our way every moment. And according to our deserve, some are nice and some are tough. Some are this and some are that. There's duality because that's the nature of the place. So our challenge or our mandate is to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. And so one of the things that we can do is try at least to come to the mode of goodness. That was part of my response, and that is, those things that are good, we do them regularly, regardless of, you know, today I feel like this, and tomorrow I may not feel like this. We do because, in a regulative way, we understand they're good. So I regulate my life with those things that are good. Whatever my feelings may be today and tomorrow and the next day, I can take note of that. But that's not going to determine my doing, not doing. Tomorrow I may be able to do more. Today I may be able to do less or less qualitatively, but I'm going to do because it's good for me. And I'm under the order of scripture and guru to do. So I do. And joyfully, not begrudgingly. Because I know it's good for me. Yes, it's variable. Anything else for those that have to leave? Anyone else that has to leave has a question? Okay. See you guys later.
Can you elaborate on the apparent paradox of being able to explain on the part of the person who is explaining it and being able to understand on the part who is hearing it, something that is inconceivable?
Yeah, it's Krishna. Krishna is the transmitter and Krishna enables the receiver. Without the Krishna factor, neither can happen. The inconceivable remains inconceivable. So it takes one who has received Krishna in that descending fashion to deliver, and it takes one who is submissive to one who has the capacity to receive it. And that's just Krishna's system. Nice system. Yeah.
Maharaj, you said that whenever we do any task, before that we ask for permission from Krishna.
And isn't that nice? That's nice, isn't it?
And then you said the devotees are free of the four defects. How do you link the two? I mean, I'm not sure.
How do you connect those two?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That it's quite... There's the position of independence and there's the position of dependence. And independence, I'm not considering my relationship with Krishna. I'm considering I have these resources. There's a situation in front of me. How do I bring these resources to the situation that's in front of me? And it's independent thinking. The dependent thinking is, here's a situation coming my way. Here's some resources, but first thought goes to Krishna, or Guru and Krishna. In that reflective moment, I have a relationship with Guru and Krishna. That's the most important thing in my whole existence. That's the essence of my existence. Krishna has given me some resources. Krishna has given me some service coming my way. On your behalf, Krishna, please direct me, because I'm not independent. Please direct me how this situation coming my way can be addressed in the proper mood, in the proper way, in service to you. And my spiritual master, your representative, your external manifestation, has given specific or general indications how I should conduct myself as a spirit soul sojourning in this foreign land called the material world, how I should live my life. Let me bring my prayers to my spiritual master, to Krishna, to guide me according to their indications. And then I act. And when one acts according to those indications, it's not flawed, like the conditioned soul has these four defects. Now, in the discussion, it's been said, this is in degrees, is it not? And the answer is yes. It's not, in other words, it's not like an off-on switch. When there's degrees of being less covered or more covered. Correct? You with me? For all of us, we're less covered than we used to be, but we're still covered. We're not in the position where we want to be. There are degrees of being covered and uncovered. It's not off and on. 0 to 100, and there's nothing in between. It's 0 or 100. There's in between. So the prayer is, let me become exclusively fixed in your service and directed by you. That's the four defects are gone. Go the other direction. The more inattentive we are to that relationship with Krishna, the more likely we are to be subject to the four defects of a conditioned soul. That address your question? Not exactly.
For example, if I stand ready for studying, I do pray to Krishna, I'm cognizant of the relationship or something like that. But after that particular task, if there is a pride or some faulty word takes over, then.
Not if.
It does. So then.
Then?
Then do I ask for forgiveness or.
Yes. And then the real propelling agent that carries you beyond again falling prey to pride and false ego is the rectification part. That is, redouble your effort to see what it is that you're doing is in relation to Krishna. That the ability is coming, you know, Krishna gets all credit. And I want it that way. Krishna is my master. I'm his servant. So whatever field of activity, not only in, you know, in your worship or your chanting or your scripture study, it's Krishna consciousness is not, you turn it off when you go into the lab and turn it back on when you walk out. It's on all the time. So it's a challenge, no doubt. But that's the challenge that those of us that have conditioned natures have to face. We have our psychophysical conditioning, and we have to face the fact that we've series of choices have brought us to this position where we have a psychophysical nature and we're conditioned by it. So now I want to become free from that conditioning. I have to leave the Krishna conscious switch on when I go into the lab and think how I can do this for Krishna, how Krishna, whatever ability is there, it's been given by Krishna. It's not just my gene pool or how hard I've tried for all these years to get to this stage. That's, you know, that's what really did it. I've really sacrificed a lot and I'm smart. I can do my PhD thesis because I did all those things and I've got a good gene pool. I went to good school. My mom and dad were real kind and put me to good schools. You know, those are material apart from Krishna evaluations. But Krishna has given you good parents and good capacity and a good gene pool. And, you know, the determination to work hard and so forth. And Krishna's given you all those things. But unfortunately, in the past, I was doing those things not at all mindful of Krishna and my relationship with him. I want to change that. And it's a challenge because we're very conditioned to the other way. Face the challenge with courage and devotion. Don't quit. Face the challenge with courage and devotion. Krishna will see that effort and he'll help you. And the realization will be sublime. Krishna, to the rescue. And then you'll start to see the modes of nature and how the modes of nature is completely consuming, you know, your colleagues to the left and right and the people above you, completely moved by pride and passion. You know, Krishna consciousness is unknown for most of academia. Just, you know, they don't go well together. But there you are. You're in academia and, you know, with courage and devotion, go forward. Cultivate your Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees who are striving in the same way. That'll be a great strength. And your sadhana will be a great strength and scripture study will be a great strength and your prayers will be a great strength. You have a lot of strength resources and go, go, go into the battlefield.
You mentioned that the mode of transcendental goodness is where immediately the thought goes to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
It's different than the mode of goodness reflection.
Yeah.
So, is it? I mean, as a practicing devotee, can I think? I mean, can I practice that by thinking about my spiritual master?
Sure.
Because, you know,
how else are you going to do it? Because we're not there yet. But then one has to properly see the spiritual master because it can then again be another material thing. Scripture tells us that the spiritual master, the function of guru, is an external manifestation of the Lord in the heart. Because we cannot see Krishna, Krishna manifests himself in that way. That's another leap to make. It's not a prop. It's not, you know, like the deity is not something wood or stone or metal. So we're not there yet. We're not seeing the spiritual master in the proper way any more than we're seeing Krishna in the proper way because we're conditioned. But scripture gives us the light by which we can see and then we apply ourselves with sincerity and the light comes on, and then we can see. Even when we can't see, that's the reality. Spiritual reality is reality. And scripture and instructions are to help bring us to that reality? So the answer is yes. Kiran?
For a person who is in mode of goodness and with reflective mentality, how does that help? And for a person who is in transcendence and who that remembers, how does that have any bear?
Sure, it does. For the person in the mode of goodness, direction. Prabhupada writes, intelligence is the form direction of the Lord. That way. So it, scripture tells us that way. You should see this way. You should act this way. You should speak this way. And not that way. It's direction. Form direction. Allows us to, and if we're submissive, not just information processors, but if we're submissive, then we can see. According to the, you can see as Krishna sees. Because, like Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is describing the modes of nature. He's describing things as he, as they are, as, and that's as he sees them, as they are. We don't see as Krishna sees because we're covered. But if we are submissive, then we can see as Krishna sees. Okay, so initially in the mode of goodness, it's providing us direction. And in the transcendental position, it serves to enhance or excite our desire to surrender to Krishna and to serve Krishna and be submissive to Krishna. It's not just, wow, check that out. Look at that. Whoa. You know, seeing and then understanding. But it's impetus for service. But then we also have knowledge how to serve because we have Shastra Chakshush.
Told on the moment by moment submission to the spiritual master. So this concept may elevate one from the three modes of nature to the transcendence.
Yes.
And
that was.
Yes, and yes, but when I mean sometimes I'm forgetting the concept actually, and then it's coming back.
Well, it's more sometimes remembering in those rare moments of illumination we sometimes remember, and most of the time we're forgetful.
So what should I
say? You just, according to the capacity that Krishna has given, you strive. Don't lament because my capacity is less than the next guy's. Just whatever your position is, you strive according to needs Krishna has given. And be ready that Krishna may take away some forgetfulness. And don't protest when he does. Because that forgetfulness is activities of indulgence and, you know, complacency and spacing out. And, you know, we like our spacing out time. We like our complacency. But, you know, Krishna may give you a little pinch. Oh! Krishna, what are you doing there? And that's only because we're lazy. You know, because if we weren't lazy, we'd have to do that. I'm just, you know, warning you that there's some bumps in the road. When the bumps come, don't whine and complain. Take them as, this is Krishna's kindness. And it's not just at your particular stage, it's all the way. Because, you know, the goal is the most elevated goal, so the price is the greatest price. Our independence has to be sacrificed. Our indulgences of complacency and lethargy and so on, we have to, like, you know, give them up. And we're attached to those things. It's like our identity. False identity. We're so habituated to take credit for anything that happens that's good and blame other people for things that don't happen good. It's just, we're conditioned. So the instruction that you received is correct. There's conscious choices we're making at every moment. Krishna or not Krishna. In relation to Krishna, not in relation to Krishna. I've done enough Krishna, now I need a break. I need a vacation from devotional service. But that mentality is part of material mentality. You know, I work hard and then I deserve a vacation. It's described right in Nectar of Devotion. It's the mind. Sankalpa vikalpa, accepting and rejecting. And when it's always in the accepting Krishna, we're not accustomed to that. The mind rebels. It's the mentality that brings us to the mature world to begin with. We have an attitude towards Krishna problem. And we're carrying that while we're trying to go to Krishna. It doesn't, you know. So, beware. Yes.
Maharaj, the same lens as what you have mentioned. You said that you came to the material world because we had an attitude problem.
Yes.
But at that stage, it was a clean slate, right? We were in the spiritual world. There was no trace of any sin or envy or Maya. Influence of Maya. So how did we end up making such a big blunder?
Okay.
Because that's the
only yeah. The classic question. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains. This is like, you know, I'm just pressing the restart button. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that to think of the soul's conditioning as an event within time is misleading. Any more than thinking of the souls emanating from Krishna as an event within time. Souls emanate from Krishna. But it wasn't that once upon a time there was just Krishna and he was hanging out and he looked at his watch and thought, gee, it'd be nice to have some living entities. And it's an event. It's the souls emanate from Krishna. It's not an event in time. Similarly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the event of the living entities becoming conditioned is an event. It's not an event in time. We can only think of events, the binary processor, can only think of events in time. That's our totality of experience. What are eternal events? Anyway, Krishna's Leela, they're eternal events. We think of them in terms of past, present, and future, but they're eternal. They're not past, present, and future. The Bhaktivinoda says, do not ask a misleading question. When the living entities were created, or when the living entities were enthralled, or the circumstances around the enthrallment, because the framework of the question is as an event in time, which it is not, although it's an event. Thank you. Anything else? It's almost 9 o'clock. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.